Alrighty.
Buy cattle.
Well, good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the Capitol at 9 o'clock, Monday, October 5th, I believe, for a work session on case number PU-15-114, Sakakawea Pipeline Company, LLC, 16-inch crude oil pipeline in McKinsey and Montreal County. This is a siting application. We held the hearing on, when was that hearing? I thought I had that date list written down here.
Earlier.
August 21st, earlier. And held it out in Stanley, I believe, and had a good conversation with the company, and some members of the public were there, and we did have a number of late-filed exhibits requested. I believe there was five of them, I know we've gotten at least five, and I don't have the list of the full late-filed exhibits if there's more that we're still waiting for. So I guess how I'd like to run this is after my colleagues have a chance to offer opening comments, just walk through with our attorney and staff the various late-filed exhibits and issues. There are a few issues on this pipeline. Probably the biggest remaining issue is the tribal involvement and the issue of our jurisdiction over tribal lands. And so I'm interested in hearing kind of the legal analysis of that. And then they did offer a number of things that I appreciate. The block valve, there were some siting routing issues that were clarified at the hearing. So some of the people who were most concerned about this had their issues satisfied at the hearing. They also wanted this additional block valve, which the company has agreed to offer. So that's a good positive step as well. So there's a few things to walk through this morning, and I'll just see if Randy or Brian have any opening comments they'd like to make, and we can kick it over to Zach and Julie.
I don't have opening comments.
Okay.
Ready to get started.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree with everything you said. I would just only emphasize that I'm pretty cool with this pipeline. I just want to get flushed out the tribal allotted land discussion, because I've read four different sides of that, and Zach and I have had robust discussion. I know he's got some good, strong arguments to follow, but I think we'll work through it. Just once again, I think this is a precedent-setting decision that we make. Each case is different, but this will be a big one, so thank you for setting it up.
Sure. Okay. Without further ado, Zach, you want to run the show from here?
Well, I'll try. Good morning. there were five late-filed exhibits, as noted. The waivers, just a rundown of kind of where we're at with the waivers. We did recently receive one of the waivers that included quite a few of the residences within 500 feet from the pipeline center line. There is one outstanding waiver, and as I understand from communicating with the company, that is being worked on, and the individual landowner wants to sign the waiver at the same time as signing the easement, which brings us to the easement discussion.
One quick sec on the waiver,
sure.
Zach. I have in my notes seven waivers were needed. They had five at the hearing, and two were pending. One was with the tribe.
Yes.
And one was the individual. So which one did they receive?
The one from the tribe they received.
Okay.
Yes. And that's been filed. That's docketed. Is it Friday that it was?
Okay.
Recently, it was filed. So it was from the tribe, and they did receive that waiver.
Okay.
It was a mobile home park owned by the tribe, as I understand.
I see.
The company also indicates that they are continuing to negotiate. They anticipate having 90% in short order, but they don't have it at present. So the percentage, I don't have the exact percentage as what they actually have right now. But I understand that they're working with two specific landowners as well as others. But these two, if they get these two and they anticipate, they would have 90% acquired along the route.
Zach, I want to go back to what you said to make sure I understood. You said there was a tribally owned park that had waivers. So does that mean the tribe then waives for all those individual residents?
They're the owner. They're the owner of the property, and they have the authority to waive.
So if it wasn't tribal land and Bill owned all the property and the residents inside there, we wouldn't consult them about the waiver, even though it's them and their families affected?
No, I think that the owner of the land is the way that the regulations have it, that the regulations state that that it's the property owner and they own the property. And
so if we take that if we have somebody, and I'm just trying to make sure I understand, that if we have a farmer that is renting the farmstead and the owner says okay, but the person that's inhabiting the residence said it's not okay, that's the law supports that?
I think that, look, Commissioner, anyone can challenge anything these days. But I think that the owner of the property, unless there's something, I suppose, specific in that lease agreement with the individual owner, I suppose, that could be the case. But my understanding here is that the tribe received the waiver, and that's what's required.
Okay, thank you.
And that land is not tribal land that the trailer park is on?
You know, that's a very good question.
Trailer park?
I don't, let's see if the waiver says that. I don't know. I will have to get back to you on that.
We can dig
question.
Into that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Nope, no problem. And then the ease, okay, are we done with waivers?
Yes.
Brian, did you have more questions on that?
No, not at all. That's just not a big issue, just a clarifying issue, right. So we know exactly what we're doing or not doing on this.
Then the easements was...
Get
your mic ready.
I'd just point out, to be saying that they're almost to 90%, but we don't have the percentage. They're at 81% way back when we had the hearing already, so that means really almost very little has been acquired since then.
The Commissioner Christman had a question, which I posed to the company about the Shobe property. You'll recall that Mr. Shobe appeared on behalf of his parents at the hearing, and then there's quite a bit of discussion at the hearing regarding whether or not the proposed route crosses his line, and then it was determined that it was an alternative route that was being negotiated. It's my understanding response to that question regarding the Shobe sections as to acquiring easements from the landowners to the south and east of the Shobe sections, that is continuing negotiation. So that issue has not been resolved at this time, to my understanding.
So when you say the issue isn't resolved, they are still working on the easements, but there's the route does not go through Shobe's property.
That's correct.
Okay. And if they were to change that, they'd have to either come to us before or they'd have to find a way to do it afterwards through the legal process that's set up.
Right. Just a brief update regarding where they are at with the Army Corps of Engineer, because you remember that there is a significant crossing here.
Mm-hmm.
The company reports that the review of the environmental assessment is expected to be complete mid-October. After that, revisions would be submitted by the company to the Corps, and then a final NEPA document would go out for public comment. And then once that process would be complete and a finding, an anticipated finding of no significant impact would be drafted, and Section 408 and Section 10 process would be concluded. As far as a timeline on that, I think at the hearing that was discussed, and as far as any type of definitive timeline, that simply does not exist at this time. But they are continuing to work on that with the Corps. There was an issue brought up at the hearing regarding placement of the line near a nuclear missile site. Julie Prescott and I do have a follow-up question for the company that we need to talk to them about. It's not within 1,200 feet, but whether or not it's in an area within 30 feet on either side of the direct line between a launch or launch control facility was brought up at the hearing, and we just need to follow up with the company on that. So we will do that.
What did the Air Force say in their consultation?
They indicated that it was not within 1,200 feet. It was outside of that that area by about 9.5 feet, and they asked that it would be, you know, their preference that it be as far away from the 1,200 feet as possible, but it's outside of that line by 9.5 feet.
And they, in the 30 feet?
That wasn't addressed, and that was the question that we need to follow up with the company on. Okay. Because in testimony from Mr. McCarthy, he indicated that there were three areas, I believe, that were within that 30 feet, and we just haven't gotten clarification as to where that is at. So we need to follow up with the company, because the letter from the Air Force only addressed the 1,200 feet. It mm-hmm. didn't address the 30 feet issue.
Okay.
That's my understanding. I haven't had a chance to talk to the company on that.
What was the 30 feet? I've read that in our...
Yeah, it's 69060802 sub G. Area is exclusion zone. Area within 30 feet on either side of a direct line between ICBM launch or launch control facilities to avoid microwave interference. We have that as an exclusion zone.
On either side of a direct line between... Okay. So between two of them? There's a direct line, and is that what we're looking at? I guess I don't understand what that actually means. Within 30 feet on either side of a direct line between ICBM launch and launch control. The launch control facilities and the actual missile?
Cross. That's my understanding, and maybe Julie Prescott has a better understanding being an engineer. But
Mike isn't on, Julie.
I haven't had a case where this was an issue before, but I think your understanding, my understanding is the same as yours, as the launch and then the actual control facility, and they're saying a line between that. And I thought the testimony was that they crossed that line three times. So anyway, we need to clarify.
So that would be then an exclusion area.
It would be.
It is our, in our exclusion areas.
So we need to seek follow up. I mean, it in one of the maps that was provided by the Air Force, it appears that there was some movement of the line at some point in that area. So whether or not that was enough to take care of that issue, I don't know. We need to find out, and we will.
Okay.
And if it is an issue, then we'll have to address it in the order.
Do we have maps of this? Do you guys? Would you be able to point to a map?
I don't think, because we don't.
They're not identified?
They shouldn't be, no, because that's probably probably something type of control information for the Air Force. But we dealt with this in the case going into Berthold, and I think we consulted back with the Air Force and had them basically send a letter saying they were okay with the final routing without getting into specifics of where their actual facilities were.
Well, I think the sites, now maybe the launch systems, but I remember seeing...
You know where the sites are at, but the lines were
right.
Don't want to know, say exactly where the power line's coming
facilities
in.
Facilities are, right.
Yeah, we're just basing this on what the company has... I mean, the company has indicated that there's three crossings, and we just haven't gotten any concrete, you know, information. They indicated that they would supplement it. So we're not looking to identify specific locations, certainly not. We just want to make sure that it's the issue is satisfied.
Yeah.
I think that if we got a letter, excuse me, Randy, go ahead.
When we talk about it crossing the line three times, we're not talking about the actual interconnection line. We're talking about it crosses the imaginary line that's 30 feet outside, away from the interconnection line, correct?
That's my understanding of it. Julie,
so it circles within that 30 feet.
I don't think there's anything.
That's my understanding.
Yep.
We don't know one way or another.
We really don't.
No.
For sure.
Okay.
But I don't think we
don't have a map of it, and Commissioner's Kalk point is well taken, too. I mean,
the Air Force, didn't they provide context here in their document to us?
They provided context as to the 1,200 feet.
Yeah, so just ask them to flush out a better
letter
that says the Air Force is fine with the final route and it does not affect our facilities, or it does, but it should be does not. And then that, to me, that buttons up what we need from them. We don't need to know where their stuff is at.
But, no, we don't.
But, you know, when the residences that are within 500 feet are an avoidance area, so they get a waiver, and then something can happen within that avoidance area. If this is an exclusion area, are we allowed to authorize it, even if it's okay with the Air Force, or is it an exclusion area, meaning we can't?
But my understanding is there is not an exception for an exclusion area. So that's why we need to button this up to see whether or not did the line move. Is it still an issue? Is it an issue? That's what we need to answer. And you're right, Commissioner Christman. I mean, for an avoidance area, there's means in the regs for getting some type of waiver or making some type of showing. The company can make a showing of, you know, no alternatives or whatnot. Here, it's an exclusion zone.
Oh yeah, and they clearly mark on their table.
Yeah,
it's within 30 feet of either side of the direct line. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
And kind of segueing here, there was an indication that the Bureau of Indian Affairs was going to be issuing environmental assessment and anticipated FONSI finding no significant impact. That was issued on the 28th of August, according to the company, and the documents were deemed complete, according to the company, on the 27th of September, 2015. Which brings us probably to the more significant discussion probably for today in many respects, but the issue with allotted land and fee lands. There's a little, about 3 miles, I believe, of land that is allotted land, tribally owned allotted land, where this route passes through, crosses through. And the question...
Before you get to the
yeah.
Can you point out on the map where exactly the 3 miles is? I'm looking at Exhibit 3. Is it all the blue land, or is there something different that I'm missing, just so I know exactly what you're saying? Because that looks like 3 miles, give or take.
Yeah, if you're looking at Exhibit 3, Commissioner, the blue, the dark blue... Is representative of the Fort Berthold tribe lands, the allotted lands that we're talking about, yes.
Okay, so there's allotted land just west of the lake or the river for a half mm-hmm. mile, then not allotted lands for a couple miles, and then it picks it all the way up till the boundary of the, I assume that's the boundary of the tribe ground, of the reservation.
Right. Okay. The company, yes. the company did present a memo, research well done memo. They filed Exhibit 15. The company actually does indicate it. At least my reading of it is more or less a preference to permit the full 70 miles inclusive of the allotted land. My read on it is such as
70 miles from where to where, from the entrance point to the
end to end, start to end is my understanding. Julie, is that
the whole
your
line? Yes.
Yeah, the whole line, 70 miles at once. permitted. I think in my mind the tribe here has all it does is provide an easement to the company, and there isn't any type of review that we would do for our siting review. I mean, our siting review is quite extensive, required by state statute. We have quite a number of things that we're looking at. The tribe does not look at those. Our interests, in my opinion, are not opposed with the tribe, and I think that's a factor in the analysis. I think, by way of example, a good way to and it's not the best example, I'll grant you, but it is. I think it's appropriate. Is when a county says, "Well, there needs to be a conditional use permit for." A pipeline going through our county. We're still reviewing everything, but if the county says no conditional use permit company, the project can't proceed. Here, the tribe says no easement company, the project through those areas can't proceed. It's not necessarily a direct conflict. We're not usurping any type of authority from the tribe. What we are saying is look, we want to make sure that this pipeline does all the things that are required. We want the reclamation issues resolved for the landowners. If you remember at the hearing, some folks who were within this area, or maybe it was past hearings, it may be confusing, but I believe it was this hearing where they indicated, well, we're kind of in no man's land. We call up and it says, well, it's not our problem. It's you need to call the tribe, and the tribe says we need to call the state. It's kind of the back and forth. So here, it's my opinion, my recommendation, after consulting and having conversations with Alana, who's in agreement with me, because this isn't being challenged by the tribe is not saying, well, no, PSC, you don't have jurisdiction here. No one is saying, no, PSC, you don't have jurisdiction here. It's my opinion that this is not an issue. And if we take a position here saying that we don't have jurisdiction over these allotted lands, that creates a problem potentially in the future where we may have more of a significant interest. And there is, in the memo, it is indicated that there are instances where there may be state interests that are extreme here. Here, I mean, are we going to say, or can we say, and I think the answer is yes, can we say that our interests are extreme in protecting the natural scape of these properties?
When we get to the, I'm cutting you off because otherwise.
No, that's fine. I'm going on a little bit.
Yeah, you're getting waved. This is all good, but I need to uptake and
no, go ahead.
Back and forth a little bit. On the, as this flushes out, there's a couple things that, when you talk about the state's interest, if and when we get to an order, I think we want to define the state's interest is not that the state builds has this pipeline, but the state's interest is protecting its citizens to make sure their health and welfare from the pipeline. So the state's interest is clear that protecting citizens, not building a pipeline.
Yeah,
that's the way I would understand when you say state's interest.
And thank you for
because when somebody hears us talk about state's interest, that can go a lot of different ways. But I think it's our citing. Whatever you want to call it, our siting jurisdiction is our state interest.
It is.
And that's what we're protecting. We're not protecting their ability to build a pipeline and pay taxes. So just that's why I see that. If
health and safety of it, because if something were to happen or if something was not constructed within our regulations in this area, not saying that it would, but certainly it would have impact on the adjoining and adjacent landowners who may be on state-owned property.
But we should define state's interest a little more so it's not as vague. And then your analogy about overriding a county on a conditional use permit, I agree with that to a point. Mm-hmm. And maybe that point is for a pipeline. If a county says no on a conditional use permit in a pipeline, I think, I mean, you're an attorney, but there's no way that the court can go in and overrule the county on the pipeline. That's the stink that's going on up in McKenzie County now. But if it's a power line, it's different. The way I understand it.
In a certain circumstance, a company can challenge what the county has done as far as a conditional use permit. So they can challenge it, and a court can reverse the county's.
So it's not saying like you made it out that it can't be done. It's harder, but there's a
I'm process. Saying that what I meant and probably wasn't very clear is the PSC can't countermand it. The PSC can't
Agreed.
Come in and say, county, here we don't like your position on the conditional use permit. Position you've taken, so we're overruling it.
Agreed.
We're saying that we preempt. We don't have that authority.
That's a clarification because
yes.
There is a process that they can be overruled.
That is true. That is true.
And that's where maybe the analogy is good to a point, but if I don't know the tribal law, but you're saying that the tribe themselves has said they're okay with this.
It's my understanding.
Well, but do they have a document in their record somewhere that says that other than somebody said that's what they
well,
said?
You're just going by the fact that they signed a permit. An easement.
That's the waiver. Good. That's the waiver. What I'm going...
And an easement. So basically they're saying, go ahead, we're okay with this line going on this land.
And it's my understanding that they have signed an easement, and that's required. As far as the actual easement being in the record, no, it's not. But we don't require other easements to be in the record.
I understand that. I'm just trying to think of the process of appealing if in fact there isn't an easement or there's, I don't know, like the way I understand allotted land is it's allotted to individual tribal members. So there's a tribal member that owns some of this land so that they have this land themselves. It was an experiment or something that was tried in the way back when. So it's not, this is tribal land. It's allotted to certain members of the tribe. That's where this gets really confusing in a hurry. But I'm wondering so they have this easement. If someone challenges it in their system, there being the tribal system, how does that all play out?
Mm, that's a very good question. If someone challenges the easement in the tribal court, they would have to challenge it in tribal court, and it would be more of an issue, I would, and off the cuff here, it would be more of an issue for the company, I would say, and the tribe, of course, because it's being challenged because they signed the easement. So, I mean, it would be kind of the same type of... And I grant you my analogy is imperfect, but some type of analogy where the county would say, well, no, you can't. We're not approving this through here. Or a better example maybe would be if a landowner challenged the county granting the conditional use permit, saying, well, county, you didn't follow the proper procedures in granting this conditional use permit, and challenging in that way, it would still put in kind of, whether or not there would be authority for the company to put the pipeline there would be subject to question. And I think that it
down
would
the road
pause.
I mean, the Commissioner Fedorchak brings out a great point that they signed an easement so that they're okay with it, so those things shouldn't happen. But we walk down the road, if one of those things, the tribe doesn't do that, then, and we find ourselves in a situation again where in the past there's a system outside the tribal ground where the company can go seek relief. So that's where I think there is a system inside the tribal land, but it's not as clear.
It's not as clear.
That's not the facts of this case. I get that, too.
And that's true. But it's a fair discussion point, I believe, because, I mean, here the commission is setting some precedent, which I think the precedent here.
I don't think allotted land belongs to the tribe. I think
is it allotted or tribal land? Because they're different.
There's a difference, right.
Well,
so, I mean, I'm not sure where we know exactly. The map just says Fort Berthold Tribe Lands.
Well, I think if you look at the memo here, tribal lands, Indian lands are somewhat used interchangeably with trust lands. I mean, we're not talking about fee lands here. Fee lands is non-Indian member owned land within the
right.
geographical boundaries of the reservation. Now, I apologize for adding to the mix here, but as noted in the memo, that's Exhibit 15, that issue is not altogether 100% wrapped up either as to fee lands, but we're not getting
We've
into
done
that
a lot
today.
Of permitting on fee lands.
Well, I mean, and someone could make an argument, Commissioner Fedorchak, that the commission didn't have jurisdiction on even on fee lands because it's within the geographical boundaries of the reservation. That's not being done here, but it's just to kind of let you know.
Nor has it been done on previous lands.
And it hasn't done on previous. But here we're talking about tribal lands, allotted land, trust land. And the Montana case generally refers, and I'm reading from the first page of this Exhibit 15, generally refers to lands owned in fee by non-Indians, including, that's fee, state or local governments as fee lands, and lands owned by tribes, individual Indians, or held in trust by the federal government for the benefit of the tribe or individual Indians as Indian lands or tribal lands. So, I mean, we're somewhat using these terms somewhat imperfectly here, but generally to describe non-Indian-owned land within, well, Indian-owned, potentially member-owned or Indian land owned within the reservation is what we're using to describe.
We don't know whether it's Indian land owned for specific individuals or
correct.
If it's owned by the tribe.
That's correct.
We don't know the whether this is one
we
of
should.
The...
There's a difference. Fee land, I think, is clear. We have jurisdiction on fee land.
Well, we know this isn't fee land.
Right, but I'm just back to we brought that out. But I think for me, even on tribal land, the allotted land is a different category, so we should know which of this... That's why I started with the beginning. Is this whole 3 miles allotted land, or is it mixtures? Because there's a difference in allotted land than it is just tribal land.
Sure. But I think the ultimate issue, I don't know that the ultimate issue here is whether or not a permit will be issued across these particular lands. And, you know, I don't know that whether or not it's individually owned, member owned, or owned by the tribe itself, you know, I don't know that ultimately that makes...
Well, it makes a difference in who their easements are signed with. If they're thinking that by signing one easement with the tribe, they can do that whole area.
I see what you're saying.
And then there's two different landowners that are tribal members that got the land allotted to them and their family back in 18 whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then they should have the right to say their piece about this too. I don't know. It's just there's many different ways to go on that.
But well, what I can do, Commissioner, is I can find out specifically from the company. You know, who these easements have been signed by. Were they signed by the tribe? Are they actually, you know, tribally owned? Or are they individually Indian member owned?
Well, I'm just trying to set up the findings. We need to define further in the order what allotted land is and what, but it goes back to, let's say the member of state of North Dakota that, let's just say it's allotted land and it's their land. the tribe has given the company permission to come across there. It's their land, and they've got no, they've never given permission to it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, a pipeline shows up across their property. Then what is their recourse?
And their recourse, I suppose, you know, and I'm speculating, is to challenge the tribal government and bring...
Which already agreed to it without listening. Yeah. I mean, that's where it's our jurisdiction is.
But when we say our jurisdiction, it's not as if we're saying... What we're saying when we issue a permit is that all of the conditions within the statute have been complied with, and you are granted the ability, you are permitted, you are given the blessing, so to speak, of the commission to construct. Now, if they don't have an easement with the individual, they got to go
but our order,
condemnation.
But our order is strong. When our order has weight in the court system. Whether it's the tribal court system, I would imagine, or a North Dakota court system, it is a factor that a judge looks at if we have or haven't, I believe it is, if we have or haven't approved the project.
Subjectively, I think you're right. Maybe not technically, because I think that technically it's...
Reality, it is.
Reality, it probably is. It says something that a permit has been issued for this route.
Zach, I want to ask you a question about these ownership, you know, different categories. In reading this section number 2 of this memorandum, mm-hmm. where it categorizes and talks about this Montana court case.
Right.
It seems to, that court case seemed to lump the completely tribally owned land with the allotted land and then refer to it as tribal land, mm-hmm. which leaves me wondering, with allotted land, is the people who have that allotment, is that a pure ownership like we might be more familiar with fee land, or have they just been allotted, like the profits and the right to graze and things like that on that, but it's really the tribe that makes these types of business decisions for mineral rights or easements and such?
That's a very good
question. It leaves me wondering, since that court case put those two categories of ownership into one and
right.
the other types into another
yeah.
broad category.
And in this particular circumstance, that's something that I need to ask the company if they know.
It just may be that the allotted lands, when it comes to easements and mineral rights, are no different than purely
right.
tribally owned, and that the allottees, if that's the people who have the allotments, they might not have any say.
Well, see, that's a great research point, because I've, and granted it's not in the record, but you can get out there and read all you want about how this started, but the way my understanding is it started where tribes allotted land to certain of their owners to let them develop their own economic base, if you will, out of it, to collect mineral rights or to do what they wanted with it, and then there was troubles with tribes allotted land to tribal members, and then they sold it off to non-tribal members, and all of a sudden then they stopped this process. So it might even be each reservation has their own set of rules on what allotted land, how it's been treated over the years.
That's just a piece I'm not mm-hmm. familiar
with. No, absolutely, but you can read both sides of that equation, that in depending which area you're talking about, they've handled it differently. Almost like each state handles it differently, but
federal Indian law issues are are very complex. They depend on facts, circumstances, and they can go one way or the other fairly quickly.
So and I'm not saying I think this is the right way to go. Just a discussion point. What would be the harm if we? What would be the big pitfalls if we had a finding there that said that we've held the hearing, we at commission see no particular concerns along this area, but feel it is not our siting jurisdiction, therefore we will remain silent from A to B, but everything we've been able to pick up so far, everything's in order.
Yeah,
it's way outside the box, but it shows that we've taken diligence from it, but it also shows that, you know, it's not necessarily our place.
Well, and that brings out the question that they present in this memo, which would be nice to have an answer to as well, is does the tribe have a similar process for granting authority for a transmission line? And then, you know, that kind of goes to, if they don't, then are we really infringing on their rights to govern themselves if they don't have a process for providing this type of a permit.
Right. One is my understanding that the tribe does not have a permitting process similar to ours. And that brings out kind of my original point where I went on a bit long, but it is the health and safety aspects to the citizens of North Dakota, where I think the commission certainly has an extreme interest in protecting. And if there is not a review and it's simply an acquirement of an easement, property acquisition, essentially, you have the right to use my property to put in a pipeline without any other further review, then I think that is the problem. And also, too, back to your question, Commissioner Kalk, the precedential effect could be used against the commission in future cases where this actually is an issue. Here it is not an issue because no one is challenging mm-hmm. this particular issue.
But if a tribal government wanted to put up a 50-megawatt wind farm, I have no jurisdiction there. They could just do it. So you start mixing and matching energy siting concerns. Many of the tribes have looked at that. There's a singular tower up there by Devil's Lake. Granted, that was below the siting threshold at the time, so it didn't come out. But we had, when I first got in the commission, we had questions about are we going to be involved in siting of wind farms on tribal ground? And our answer back then was, no, that's not our jurisdiction for siting wind farms.
Yep.
And so that's ringing in the back of my head somewhere, mm-hmm. too, in this whole thing.
And, you know, there again, I mean...
I know everything's different, but
yeah,
I'm just saying...
I'm not saying this, but I think that there could be a genuine good faith argument where the commission could have some jurisdiction there, depending on what the tribe had as far as regulations go for siting such a facility.
Mm-hmm. They would, a private company would have to get permission from the tribe to do it.
Yes.
And then, you know, the tribe could develop their own process or.
Right, but if a tribe wanted to do only 800 feet from residences, and ours is different, we'd have a setup there of. Anyway, it's just.
Yeah.
It's just something that
good
we just.
Good point. The BIA, it sounds like, has the ultimate authority over the easement.
As I understand it, there's also a requirement for the BIA to also. and an easement as well in addition to the tribe.
It sounds, yeah, if this memo, based on this memo, the Tribal Business Council has provided consent for the easement, now it goes to the BIA, who can't approve it until the environmental assessment is done. If I'm reading this correctly, on page 4.
Yes, that's how I read it as well, Commissioner.
All right, well, so what outstanding information do we need here to make a decision on this piece, to reach conclusion on this piece?
I think the issue with the Air Force, we need to follow up with that.
No, I just mean on
the with
stuff.
The jurisdiction issue. I think I will get further clarification from the company as to, the distinguishing factor as whether or not it's individually Indian-owned land or is it actually tribally owned land that we're talking about here specifically. And it's my understanding from the company that that all that is going to be done is granting an easement. There is no additional review such that we have under state regulations. So I don't know that we really need any additional information aside from that. But certainly it will be presented in a proposed findings and the commission will obviously have the opportunity to review that.
Randy or Brian, do you just want to wait and see that information and think about this further, or do you have any thoughts that you want to share now on where you're headed with this piece?
Well, I'm open to going either way. I truly am. I just think that whatever way we end up here, we've got to have good findings of why we ended up that way. And the information from the company is good, but what has the tribe given us on the record? Julia talked about the permit easement, the BIA, EIS, if you will. That's kind of big to see how that plays itself out. So I think it's, for me, it's just kind of back to the question: is that all? We don't have anything from the tribe that says they agree with this or don't agree with this.
Well, and that's just it.
Not like where a county shows up and a county says we're in consultation with them, and therefore so there's a hole there.
Although the company has said that the tribe has said it's okay with it. And many of these cases come in, and the company will testify that they have various permits from political subdivisions, and the counties don't show up, and they're on the record and under oath, and we take their word for it. So
they often show the permits, so in the they often provide actually a copy.
It's a late-filed exhibit sometimes. Or it'll say,
yeah, included in the binders. And
Does the SHPO have jurisdiction to go do in the Kiwi? They do their cultural stuff. But did they do the cultural surveys in this land, or
do you know?
Doesn't tribal have their own SHPO? But I don't remember seeing anything.
Because I just thought of that just now. I'm thinking, okay, well, if the SHPO has to go out there and do the surveys, if the North Dakota SHPO is doing the cultural surveys here, that means they had permission to do it.
I don't know the answer to your question, Commissioner Kalk, but I will find
it. See where I'm going with that, though.
I do.
If the tribal SHPO was given authority on this land, that's one factor. But it should be flushed. We should have flushed that out in the hearing.
One possible approach would be to have the order contingent on, you know, execution of the easement by the tribe and, you know, the appropriate documents from the BIA. Because they'll, you know, they kind of use the language here: upon execution of this easement by the tribe will likely have exercised the only authority it intends to assert under the circumstances, with no further approvals or regulations needed. So, you know, that's just a possible approach.
The other thing, too, is I should note that the company is going to be providing proposed findings. They indicated they wanted to wait until today before working on finalizing to see kind of what direction the commission might be might be leaning one way or the other. So we will be receiving that, and obviously we will be working on findings as well.
And you'll be able to break out what that 3 miles, what is allotted land, vice what is tribally owned land?
Yes.
Okay, that's just a good thing to have.
They can't start construction of this until they receive all that NEPA approval and all of that, right?
For that particular area, that's an additional requirement that the company has for that particular area of land. It's not that our, you know, even if we grant a permit for that area, if they don't have permission, then they can't build on that area.
But could they go ahead and build the rest?
Yes.
You know, the other 50 miles or whatever it is?
And there have been some projects that have done that. I don't know that they'd have a receiving place if they start on the other side of the river and go north, where they would get the oil. But
even north of the reservation, we're still tied up by the, I'm assuming it's north of the reservation where the ICBM interconnection lines are. So is that little...
Yeah, well, we'll have to get that resolved before we get a permit anyway, because that's an exclusion area.
But to your question, Madam Chair, I'm open to anything we end up here as long as it's a good record. Why?
Okay.
Because I can just see it. I mean, this is jumping out of this case, but we're going to be answering this question about our jurisdiction on or off for power lines. You can see that coming, and you can see wind farms.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever we do here, I want it just to apply to make it very clear it applies to this case and this set of facts.
Right.
That it can't be extrapolated to some other decision that people might try to box us into. We're out of.
Okay. Excuse me. Zach? I think that concludes the tribal piece.
Commissioner, I don't know that we need to go through, certainly can, the other late-filed exhibits. If the commissioners had any questions on those, late-filed exhibits, spill histories, leak monitoring information, spill response scenarios, the plan, draft plan, pigging information, and then there was an analysis and an agreement indicating that an additional block valve would be included. I don't have anything on those. I don't know, Julie, if you have anything on those.
I brought them, but
Julie, can you walk through this one? The I thought this was this must be a spill record, huh?
It's what they provided. just for Phillips 66 Partners, they're showing a large event in 2008 with minor events subsequent to that. There's no information as to what that event was or how it was addressed, other than this is all we have, a volume not recovered, 31,000 barrels.
The green is the mileage, the total miles. The yellow is, what is it, barrels per mile?
I'm not real sure what that's supposed to mean, barrel miles.
Times 10 million miles.
But
maybe you can walk through this with the company and then get a better understanding of what they're telling us here.
Yeah, there's any detail about where that event occurred or anything. So,
okay.
We can do that.
And then maybe I'm just missing it, but the worst case scenario is, where's that? Have you seen that information?
Yes.
Late file exhibit. What number is that one?
I believe it is 13. It's identified on this.
Part 2.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Late file exhibit part 2. They indicate.
Can you read that?
I blew it up so I could read it. Yes, they do indicate that their analysis showed a highest volume release point. It's just before you get to milepost, that's 24, and they're showing, trying to read this here. Total volume of just less than 5,000 barrels at that point, but that would be their highest volume release, just at 20 mile post, approximately mile 23.8.
5,000 barrels.
They're showing a total volume of 4,994 barrels.
Okay. I was wondering if I could. Have you looked at where that is, the milepost 20? Oh, here.
Yes.
It's on the other side of the...
It's on the north.
The west side of the lake, right?
East side, isn't it?
It should.
Unless
should.
These aren't mileposts here. 1, 5. Yeah. On this map.
It should be on the east side.
I'm sorry. East side. Yes. East side.
Other east.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
I think it's right by. Is that what? Is that Reunion?
It's near where the They're adding that other block valve.
Yes.
Said doesn't make much difference, but I didn't understand that.
Well, what he's saying is, I think he's saying is they've already isolated. If you look at this map or this diagram, they show the peak. they've got valves on either side. We were talking about milepost 18 and 24, and they're saying, well, they were already putting one in just to the north side or east side of that, the downstream side of that peak, to isolate that peak already. We already have something there.
Okay.
Here's.
I did think that was weird, though, because even if it's only a gallon different, it's different. So, their intent may be no function, but there is a difference. Even if it's 50 gallons.
It's a redundancy, but it's, you never know when it could come in.
Into play.
To play a huge part in this, so.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if they agree to do it, why not?
Well, yeah. It was of high value to the landowners in that area. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else that we should be discussing this morning? Okay, how would you guys like to proceed? Do you want another work session? Do we want to get the information back, look at proposed findings, fact, conclusions, law and order, and then go through that during a work session, or do you want to just have staff circulate a propose after you get it from the company and you guys put your tweaks on it and then we get it?
I think that's probably the most efficient is we put it together with our tweaks and we can circulate it and then have another
work session. We could have another one then.
Well, the whatever you decide is fine on that. But you asked me where I was at. I would like to ask you where you're at right now. As far as if you kind of got a thought, there's a portfolio of what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think that I tend to support. The tribe doesn't have a process of their own. They aren't suggesting that they want to have jurisdiction over this siting of this, and there looks like close to signing an easement. So if that process has gone through and the BIA signs off, and they provide an easement for this, then I'm comfortable with using that as indication that they don't want to exercise any further jurisdiction over this matter and providing them the permit for the whole line. And maybe some of our discussion will get back to them and we'll hear otherwise, but I think that that's a fair... And they're certainly not doing this without, full knowledge of what they're doing if they're looking at the easements and the actual nature of the line.
Well, and the tribe has an interest, too, in this project as well. Great Wolf Midstream is a tribally owned entity and is a...
Sure,
they're
one of the partners.
Well, then
that's
be,
an even... I, you
that's
know
a
what,
finding.
Zach, I kinda
that's a finding to put that in there. The and I don't know that this is just throw this out there, too, that... There has been, I can think of two occasions where there's some significant legal question that's in front of the commission, and we'll ask for an attorney general's read on this. Is this something that we would want to open that up, that we ask for the attorney general to say, what is the PSC's, what is our role on these type of unallotted lands? That's the only other thing that I thought of, that as this all unfolds, not that I don't trust your counsel or our general counsel, it's just,
fine.
And maybe there, I don't know. Just there's been this is a I guess I'd like to wait and see.
Well, yeah, it's when you look at some of the other cases like that issue up with Turtle Mountain and the casino and the
I was part of that
utility. Now there the tribe actually wanted to exercise their own
right
jurisdiction and that was known and so they
actually the factors for that case were much different than this, but it was different set of facts, but that was pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought on that, and I think that's a good idea. I think maybe going forward, it would be best to request that question in an open manner, because this issue certainly can come up where it actually is going, the question of jurisdiction. This question could come up where it actually is an issue. Here, it's not an issue yet. It's not been raised
right.
Other than, us questioning it, which is appropriate, certainly. But whether or not we ask an attorney general opinion, that's going to take more time. Certainly we can do that, though.
Well, I just think that...
I tell you, I don't think I like the idea of delaying this project that long, because I don't know how long the AG's opinions take. For some reason, I have in my mind it's months.
Probably a couple months.
As far as the ICBM lines... If I'm understanding it right, they don't cross the actual lines, but they get within 30 feet. That's probably the same landowner. Mm-hmm. I would think that some alteration can be made and that's probably a pretty quick fix. And in the case of this tribal land, whether it's allotted or purely tribal owned or whatever the correct categorization of it is, when the tribe is a partner in it and in the project and seems to be signing off on everything, it would seem to me this is something that we could probably have what I'm hearing is the two burning questions here that we need to clarify for an order answered within days. And then to delay this whole project by months waiting for an attorney general's opinion, I don't really like the idea that we would need to do that.
Well, then to take the flip side is that then we issue the order saying we have jurisdiction to do this, and then someone outside all of this appeals it. They have that right. And then what's the legal ground? So whatever we do, we better have some legal grounds on there.
We do.
Because they're, just because all these parties agree doesn't mean somebody else won't disagree.
It's not like we're going to be shoving the jurisdiction in the face of anyone. It's right. Simply going to be stating that it need not really be addressed to a heavy-handed isn't the right word, but in a lengthy manner, it because no one has challenged it, it's not an issue, and everyone had the right to present this issue to the commission at the hearing or in an intervention type process. If the tribe wanted to do that, certainly had the right to do that, but it hasn't been done. So,
yeah.
But could someone challenge it? Yes. Do I think they'd be successful in this case? I don't think so. I think that
well,
we'd
I just
have.
Think, I mean, I know this is beat the dead horse one more time, but the the commission issues out auctioneer license, except on tribal land. If you want to do an auction on tribal land and you're a tribally owned business, you don't need an auctioneer license. So there's just a lot of things to think about. I just prefer to wait. Not prefer. Let's get that what's allotted and what's tribal, and then we'll, for me to go from there. So you're not don't support the Attorney General's decision at this time or read. Okay. Fair enough.
I'm fine with this Assistant Attorney General.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Anybody? So you guys will check out the ICBM stuff, and then we will clarify the allotted versus tribal-owned and get the draft orders. And then you're going to ask the company about how to better understand that spill history map. Okay. All right. Then this work session on case number PU 15-114 is adjourned.